Thank you so much, Aaron, for being here and for being a participant to Eyes Closed and Heart Open, the Echo podcast. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
How would you like to describe yourself and your work?
Good question. So I started out not really doing this work in terms of like the spiritual stuff. I went to USC Film School and I majored in screenwriting. And I immediately after this was launched into what I thought would be my illustrious career in Hollywood. And I mean, I do work in Hollywood still. I write for cartoons. But I sort of started down this path of being a Hollywood assistant. And I sort of figured that that would be my natural trajectory of being able to ascend into the ranks of being a TV writer, which was my childhood dream. But it was sort of thwarted by this whole spiritual path thing. And it's basically a direct result of some of my experiences that I had in Hollywood, among other things, that kind of catapulted me into this work. I wound up experiencing my own death very violently, kind of like in my psyche, and it caused a Kundalini awakening. And it was after that that I learned eventually that I was a psychic medium and I was led to develop my mediumship. And I was writing cartoons by day, basically, and like developing my mediumship by night. And I kind of just did it because I was sort of hit by a car. I thought that I was like, if I didn't do it, that I would be like risking my life to not do it, basically. I never really started out doing this work thinking that I would be doing it for anyone other than my own self. But of course, as it turns out, I have sort of moved into some of that work. Now, it's not the only thing I do. I definitely feel like I'm here to mostly be an artist, or at least have it be a, more of a 50-50 kind of thing. But I do also give sessions for individuals and have a social media account that I say I would use primarily for my channeling work and my spiritual work, more so than Hollywood, although I do participate in some Hollywood like conversations. So in summation, it's kind of hard for me to like define myself because I feel like I'm kind of in this liminal space between Hollywood and the spiritual community. Like I don't really feel like I am fully in, I guess, either world in a certain sense. I kind of feel like I'm a bridge to be able to bring a lot of that spiritual stuff into the entertainment industry. And conversely, to, I think, kind of ground some of the spiritual community more in, I would say, like, maybe the 3D reality is the wrong sense of the term, but I would say my main focus has been shadow work, as the name implies. I kind of feel like that's been what my focus is in terms of the spiritual community and Hollywood. And so I try to kind of ground things in that as opposed to kind of float away in some of the like love and light kind of stuff that's out there. Not that that doesn't exist, obviously, but I just see right now the main focus that we need, I think, as humanity is to kind of like look under the rug and like clean out our closet and like that kind of thing. So I would say shadow work is definitely, I think, the thing that ties it all together. But in terms of my work, I think that I'm like basically one part artist, one part healer, one part like kind of thought leader type person. So
Definitely.
that's kind of a long-winded response, but to your question. But that's kind of been my experience.
Thank you so much. And I was not expecting a short answer anyway.
Okay.
I love your channelings because they're so like into it, you know, like when you share any energy update, I'm like, the next 20 minutes, I'm with you. Like I'm into the comments and like I just read everything and I would like to say thank you because what we can also say is that you share on Instagram like amazing energy updates based on sidereal, and we could also say like the Jyotish Vedic astrology, right?
Yes, my first astrology reading ever was actually Vedic astrology, and it was one of those things where I really wanted to see an astrologer for a while, but by that point on my path, I knew that I would just come upon whoever it was supposed to be, like serendipitously, like they would just materialize, and I knew it would be the right time and the right person, and that's been basically what happened. So it just so happened that that person was a Vedic astrologer, and I definitely feel like I was led to Vedic astrology specifically for a reason. Not only because I feel that sidereal calculations, which are different than tropical, it's like a 23 degree difference, they resonate with me more just in general, but then Jyotish or Vedic astrology specifically has the lunar mansions known as the nakshatras. And lunar mansions exist outside of Vedic astrology, but I would say Vedic astrology is where you find them used, I would say predominantly. And I would say probably the most in-depth in other astrology. Granted, I'm not an expert, so someone can correct me on that if I'm wrong, but I would say Vedic astrology uses them, I think, the most, I would say, in-depth and efficiently than I've seen other places. And so, I was very attracted to Vedic astrology through the nakshatras, and I think that's why I stuck around with Vedic astrology. Also, because I had been doing other things with the Vedic sciences in terms of like meditations and yogas and things like that. So it kind of just made sense that like I would use the astrology connected to those systems. But yeah, I factor them into my energy updates, which I'm glad you like them. Thank you for the kind words, by the way. I mostly started doing them for my own sanity, and like it's nice to like have a bit of a following, because I do feel like they've definitely grown and expanded since I started doing them. And I'm not an astrologer by trade, so I mostly use like oracle cards, a combination of like oracle, tarot, my own channeling. I usually channel before I even draw the cards, and then I incorporate the cards and then what I know about what's happening in the astrology. So it's sort of like a soup of different things that I combine into one thing. But yeah, I mostly did it for myself because I was like trying to navigate what it was I was experiencing in my own internal state. And what I've come to realize is that through Vedic astrology and how you can associate different signs and nakshatras with the chakras of the energy body, you can actually get a pretty good read on the collective without really needing to like isolate it by like your sun sign or your moon sign or your rising sign. Like obviously you can get more in-depth experiences by channeling it through those specific ways, but ultimately we're all in the body of humanity. We're all experiencing these energies of a profound nature right now. And if there's any way I can like make sense of anyone else's experience, that brings me some joy just because I know how crazy it is right now. And it's definitely helpful for me to kind of traverse these pockets of time, like these different portals, with a bit of a map, or at least a bit of a hint at what I'm dealing with. Just like when you would go on a road trip, you would take a map with you, or at least have an idea of where you're going at some point. So,
And we need that. We need those maps. So thank you for bringing them down. And anyone else here, you know, we talk about light workers and so many different themes and like labels, but one of them is map holders, and we need that. So thank you so much. What I love is the fact that you also mentioned like how much work you do for the collective, as in, of course, your energy updates, but also through your dreams, through any kind of sharing that you share on Twitter. Do you want to talk about like the individual and the collective, the fact that we have to do shadow work. We also do shadow work as bigger energy fields that have done our shadow work, we're able to do that for the collective as well through dreams, through astral travel. And how do you feel about taking on responsibilities for the collective and smashing those, let's say, egregoras and then giving the truth back to us?
You know, it's funny, I was just thinking about this morning because of some dreams I had last night that I was like thinking about as I was making my tea. And, you know, it's interesting. So I do believe, just in general blanket statement, like every person who does their individual shadow work is contributing to the collective in some way, just through the metaphysics of it all and how everything is holographically reflected in the cloud. Basically, everybody who does the individual work is contributing. Now, what I have found in my experience is that, and again, I think just due to my own path, I think I'm in this a bit more deeply maybe than another person might be. But again, at the same time, I know there's a lot of people who are on this cleanup crew of sorts, of people who are here to kind of like do extra. But what I have found is, if you are one of these people who is cleaning up more than just your own stuff, and when I say that, I kind of include also like your individual shadow work, I would say, is connected also to like your immediate family situation or whatever experience you grew up in. And then by sort of proxy of that, like the ancestral work, I would say everybody kind of has that going on. What I have found for me personally is that my ancestral karma, as well as other things that I've experienced as a result of my own individual path, kind of in Hollywood and touching other areas, sort of serves as like a hook into the collective shadow in different areas of that. So, for example, like, what's a good example? Well, I guess I'll just use the one that sort of I feel like is a kind of the crux of it all, which is, I don't really talk about this a lot. Actually, I haven't really talked about it at all just because it's kind of personal, but it's also a big part of my path, which is that my dad actually is like in the oil industry in Texas. And so I grew up basically like fully funded by that. And, you know, I'm at a place where like I can't really be in a place of judgment of that. It's just the way it's gone down. And I kind of see myself as like a human laundromat, mostly because I had like recurring dreams of laundromats last year when I was doing a lot of clearing work. But I would say like that is a big part of what I've been clearing and how that connects into like the military industrial complex and things like that. Also through my work in Hollywood, just because I've worked at various studios and things like that and for prominent people by proxy, I have also connected into a lot of like the Hollywood clearing of the entertainment industry. And through ancestral stuff, a lot of the, like I'm clearing a lot for, I would say like Anglo-Saxon or German ancestry, as well as like colonialism. So a lot of stuff related to, Black Lives Matter has come up in my dreams, or like, you know, Black liberation, as well as Native liberation. Indigenous liberation is a huge part of my path, actually. I would say returning the land to be stewarded by the Indigenous people is like probably one of the main, my main opinions, I guess, just based on like what I've seen. And yeah, so there's a lot going on with what I've been clearing. And I would say I spent a lot of time in the past few years doing a lot of work through my emotional body. When you're on this path of being an initiated mystic, you generally end up spending some time in extreme solitude slash isolation. So even before quarantine started, I was like probably 3 years deep into my isolation. So I sort of foolishly thought this was going to be the year that I got out, but it's actually become worse. But in some ways, but so I spent like a bunch of years there. It felt like an eon, kind of just like mostly crying and meditating. And that was through like how I was clearing, I think, a lot for my own self and then my ancestry. And then that it was last year, really, in 2019, where it started to really hook in more to the collective shadow in a way that I had not experienced yet. And so I actually spent a lot of time last year clearing like white supremacy, stuff connected to like Black liberation and Indigenous rights and like Nazis and things like that, just like all of that kind of stuff. And it's important to note also that my ancestry is also part Celtic. So a result of that has been that I'm starting to tap into a lot of like the organic Celtic like spiritual technologies, which is really cool because that's been suppressed by in the same way that other Indigenous things have been suppressed. So I kind of just want to say this is not about being like a self-hating white person. It's just about being real about the situation. Like it's not really like I think that, there are white people out there who might be feeling very uncomfortable about what's happening, and that's fine. I would say lean into that. But it's not about being like a self-loathing person about this. It's just about recognizing what has happened and showing up to do the work. And then as a result, like a lot of our suppressed stuff that's been kind of domineered by patriarchal forces will be kind of achievement unlocked for us. But I will say we still have a lot of work to do. But yeah, last year when I was really going through it, I was unemployed at the time, and I kind of just knew like, man, shit is about to go down in 2020. Like I don't know what it's gonna be, but just based on everything I was going through, and I think it wasn't just me either, like I knew other people in the spiritual community like that I was friends with were like really like we were all kind of in the thick of it, and I was like, man, we are like laying the groundwork for whatever this 2020 is going to be. And I really was kind of clueless. Like, I wound up going on this grid working trip to Peru at the end of the year, and we were going all over like the Andean mountain areas, less so the Amazon, although we were doing ayahuasca ceremonies here and there at the time. And I had done ayahuasca previously here in the States. But again, encountered some patriarchal forces through that. So wound up kind of having to unplug. Yeah, I've noticed that whenever I find like powerful men in spiritual community, they tend to get detoxed, let's put it that way. So I had done ayahuasca, but I hadn't done it like in the traditional setting. So it wasn't the main part of the trip, but it did happen. And so we were mostly just doing like despacho ceremonies and things like that around the mountains and different sacred sites. And it was led by an indigenous guy named Jorge Luis Delgado. He's pretty well known. I really recommend his book called Andean Awakening. He's also like kind of a Renaissance man. He owns like a hotel chain in Peru and also is a tour guide and owns a tour company. And so like he was our tour guide as a part of his tour company. We were like staying in his hotels and he was like leading these ceremonies, and he was like a one man package. And he's incredible. And we wound up going to like Titicaca as like the last part of our trip. And Lake Titicaca is the sacral chakra of the world. And I knew that I've been doing so much clearing in the sacral, like just as a part of my shadow work for a while. So it kind of felt like this big climax, like culmination point in my path. And we wound up doing a ceremony at the intersection of two of the two big ley lines, like the male and female, like dragon line, basically. And It was like in the middle of the lake, on like on an island at the top of a mountain on this island in the middle of the lake that we already had to like fly an extra like flight to get to that plateau. So it was like a very remote location, and we did these ceremonies with the intent of like harmonizing the masculine and the feminine energies and the collective and like healing those wounds. And then we met some indigenous people on these like floating islands, on the Uros floating islands, and it was like being in a whole other dimension. I was just sitting there like, this is absolutely like, I felt like I was being transported. And then I also was fasting all day because we were gonna do ayahuasca at night, so it was like really intense. And we did ayahuasca that night, and we had like the most intense ceremony ever. The shaman was like afterwards like looking at the carnage like, this is crazy. And we were all definitely clearing a lot on that trip for the collective. I would say I was definitely in it for maybe a bit longer than some of the other people, including my sister who was there. She came with me. And yeah, just the whole time I was just like clearing like patriarchy, like capitalism, you know, colonialism, all these different things. So I knew it was going to be like a major shift that we were heading into for the new year. And I guess I was proven correct. I really didn't think, for whatever reason, I just didn't really think pandemic, even though there had been some Vedic astrologers who predicted pandemic or world health crisis. I hadn't really been paying attention because I was like doing other things. So when it happened, I was like, oh man, like it's pretty raw. And then by the time March rolled around, I was like transmuting so much for the through the grid. It was all connected to the ceremonies too. I could just tell because by this point, I had shifted from like clearing through my emotional body to clearing through mostly like my dream state, as well as my physical body. In fact, someone had told me, a Vedic astrologer who I'd seen had told me like, yeah, you know, for this period in your life, like it's recommended that you just get like weekly body work so that you can like handle the energy transmutation. Cut to not being able to see anyone. So I basically have just been kind of like not getting body work, obviously. But as a result, I think I've just been extra tired, which I think everybody has been extra tired, but I think everybody's kind of taking on extra right now. But yeah, I started seeing things like really get washed, power washed by like March, April, when like quarantine first started here in the States. And it was during that time that I was getting major information about what was being cleared, including at the end of that month, like the entire United States, like federal government, basically, pretty much saw that fall into a crack. And which I have talked about openly on Twitter. So, and I mentioned it late. I sort of kept it to myself for a little while because, like, I knew it was very controversial. But by May, I was like, I just need to put this out there so that when it does happen, I can, like,
So you called
prove
it.
it happened. Like, so I can just, like, prove that it happened. Like, someone's sitting here, like, but you guys, not that I need, like, validation, but. I was sort of, I've just been sitting here, you know, in my apartment, like, okay, like twiddling my thumbs, like, what's gonna go down? And again, it's all so symbolic at times with these dreams that you never really, they're not just gonna sit down and be like, this is what's gonna happen, like, Trump's gonna get COVID or whatever. Like, it was really a lot more symbolic than that. And I sort of realized only like a few weeks before it happened that it was about to happen, just based on like the lunar mansion that I had had the dream in, and the full moon being in that same place. I was like, oh, this is going to be like the culmination of all of that stuff I was clearing from the grid. So yeah, but there was a lot of stuff in there with like, you know, Black liberation and colonialism and indigenous rights, and like even satanic ritual abuse stuff was coming up. So I know it's kind of a controversial thing to talk about, but there is some truth to that, I would say. I don't subscribe to QAnon personally, but there is definitely like a dark occult layer, and I've had experience dealing with people who like are kind of in that Not intentionally, obviously, it just sort of accidentally happened. But as a result, I think I'm hooked into some of that dark occult transmutation also. So yeah, it's just kind of a, there are many layers to it, really. And I think that, you know, a lot of people are discovering kind of the layers of within themselves this year, just because quarantine has set it up to where everybody is kind of stuck with their own shit, whether they like it or not. So it's been kind of like a boot camp, I think, for everybody to kind of deal with their stuff that comes up. But I definitely feel that the collective shadow, I could definitely tell when Saturn went into Capricorn in Vedic or sidereal astrology at the end of January. That's when I would say the collective shadow stuff was really starting to become like predominant energy in the collective experience. And just because it was shortly after that that I was starting to get like a lot of intuitive hits and dreams and signs and things that that was kind of going down. So yeah, we're definitely going to be in this collective shadow transmutation stuff for the next several years. Like it's just going to be a really ongoing process just because, and I've said this before in another podcast, but it bears repeating, like the amount of work we have to do to clean the collective shadow, I would say, is like directly proportional to the environmental cleanup that we have to do. So, because I just see that as like an externalization of our own stuff, you know? So, you know, we have like entire trash continents floating around there in these oceans. So, I would say that's kind of where we're at right now, a little bit, but I think the more that people wake up, the more that people do their own individual work, it will lighten the load for the ones who've been taking it kind of, you know, hardcore level. And it'll start to kind of, I think, become a well-oiled machine. But I think that we're kind of still in this really intense, like, G-force process, like a blast off of. Like so many people remain unaware to the fact that this is even happening, like the ascension process. But I would say that that will probably be rapidly changing, just as like based on just kind of some, based on how rapidly things have changed this year, it just feels like this is an exponential process. So I think that, you know, the more people can wake up to the true nature of reality on some level, the more they can kind of adjust their own like way of operating within the reality under that context, and then we'll be kind of able to start really having the conversations that we need in terms of building out the new civilization. Because a lot of the downloads that I've been getting recently have been like in the wake of the collapse of the federal government in the US, like we have to kind of consolidate into like city states. And again, we'll see what happens. Like, but this is just kind of what's been coming to my attention. And I was like led to study Plato's Republic, and which is, again, I'm not like a scholar, but it's so long. Like, I basically have been just like watching these guys' YouTubes, like talking about it, so I can just kind of get the lay of the land. But I'm watching this guy on YouTube, Pierre Grimes. He's just like old philosopher who's like very smart. And what I like about him is that he has a comparative approach in terms of like understanding Eastern thought as well as Western thought. And that's going to be so important just because it's like kind of like the two hemispheres of the brain a little bit. It's like we have to be able to have that happy medium of like right and left brain. So he approaches it from as being a Platonic philosopher in his own right, but also being like a Buddhist scholar. So he kind of understands that like what Plato was going for with the Republic is that it's obviously a philosophical work where it's like an allegory of the city state being akin to the human soul. And so understanding how the operation of the human soul works through the macrocosm of a city-state, and then understanding how, you know, the rise and fall of a just civilization happens, and the different factors and states that kind of go into that, and how that relates to the human soul. And as a result, this whole thing becomes, in his words, Pierre Grimes, like a jnana yoga, or like a philosophical yoga, by which you can actually use to achieve a form of self-realization, which ultimately is the aim of any kind of true philosophical work. It's not just to like intellectualize the reality. It's about eventually coming into the gnosis of it, like through that stream of your brain. Like, not everyone's going to be a jnana yogi or whatever, but for those who are more inclined to that path, this serves as a jnana yoga. And actually, the first part of the yoga is to become musical, in the words of Plato. Now, again, that's an allegory, but I would say that there are probably a lot of people right now who are like exploring music for the first time, or exploring music in a new way. And that's because what we're dealing with right now is that we have to basically like harmonize the frequencies. Like, ascension is basically just a harmonization of frequency. So obviously that starts within your own self or whatever, but I would say being led to read this, understanding like the whole city state akin to the soul, becoming musical, having it kind of be about the music of the spheres type thing. And then also understanding that, as I'm integrating this information with Plato, the seed of an unjust civilization is to have a lie in the soul. And the worst lie you can possibly have, which is what I've been saying for years, like kind of in my own way, but like not knowing that it was like a Plato thing too, but what he says is like the worst lie you can possibly have in your soul is a false idea or a false cosmology, basically, as to the true nature of reality. Like, either being ignorant of that or having like a false conception of the true nature of reality. And it's so true. Like, I think that if everyone could just get on the same page on some perennial level, you know, not saying that everyone has to be the same religion, because that's not what we need. We've already tried that. But it's more like, if we can all just kind of get on board with the fact that we are all on a quantum level, like spiritual level, interconnected as one living organism experiencing itself or whatever, and that the true, and that is love, and that is beauty, and that is truth, you know, obviously on some level, if we can just come to that kind of consensus collectively as our operating idea of what the true nature of reality is, then we can actually start to have conversations about what we can build from that knowing, because that's the foundation that we really, I think, need for a civilization that will be able to sustain itself and not like kind of, you know, suffer from what we have right now, which is ultimately a very bad foundation, at least here in America. You know, the foundation of the civilization is genocide and slavery and oppression and, you know, raping of the earth, basically, through the theft of resources and the lack of care we have shown. So yeah, again, long-winded response to the question or to the intention, but that's kind of where my path has led me, at least to now. Just because my initial awakening was so intense, like with my Kundalini awakening, I was shown, like, I had ego death. I was shown like the true undifferentiated like nature of reality. So that's sort of where I'm coming from, just in terms of my path. Like, it was not a gentle process. It was a very violent event, and it was a very beautiful event, but it was like very traumatic at the same time. So, but it also gave me the very clear insight into what we're working with, And knowing that, that's why I think the real conversations we should be having right now on some level, at least in some form or fashion, with people who are interested in restorative justice is we have to understand what we're restoring justice to. Like, we have to understand what we're working with in the reality. We need to be having these cosmological conversations openly with people who are like open to that. But again, I'm just over here like on my Twitter account, like writing cartoons and things. So I don't really know. Like, I have these insights. I don't really know how I'm going to apply them. I think it's still a work in progress, but just some food for thought for those out there listening.
Thank you so much, because your words are like touching me and like activating my third eye like crazy. So I'm just like taking it in, and I'm very thankful that you're doing this, because everyone listening will be receiving the same frequency as well with the sound of your voice. So thank you.
Well, thank you for saying that too, because actually a huge part of my path this past few years has been the healing of my throat chakra. And well, the sacral and the throat have like a sacred link, so it's kind of in both. But, and I think that's true for many people who are like on the feminine path, or who identify as women, whether you're like cis woman or trans woman, it's the same energy. Because the only way patriarchy can take root is if the feminine shuts the throat. So there's a radical reactivation of the collective throat happening. It's kind of been going on since this whole Me Too thing, but probably even before then. Obviously it's been like a long process, but like in the recent times, The Me Too thing has been like a major activation, and having just had the nodes shift out of the sacral throat axis in Vedic astrology, this happened on September 19th. We're now entering into a whole new chapter of clearing of the collective energy body. We're going to be spending the next 3 years in the solar plexus heart axis, 18 months in Taurus and Scorpio, and then the next 18 months will be Libra and Aries. And so we've just wrapped up this whole like Gemini Sagittarius thing, and the collective throat is a part of that. And like at the beginning of the whole thing, when it first started, I actually suffered a really bad throat injury. And it was the whole karmic payout from like some past event. But I had a really bad throat injury where like I swallowed something sharp and like it went all the way down my throat, all the way like to my sternum, basically. I still have scar tissue from it, actually. Like I would say it's mostly healed, but like it's still kind of like scarred. Not, I don't want to say scarred for life, but like, you know, it still affects me a little bit. But the whole 2 years after that incident was like me healing my throat. And I think that like a lot of people kind of went through their version of that. And in the aftermath of this clearing, I think we're going to be seeing, first of all, I think this whole quarantine in many ways for people is about to be like a kind of incubator for like the next renaissance. I think what's happening right now is that a lot of people are going to be really leaning into creativity to actualize like a new level of self-expression that had been heretofore like unrealized by them. And for some people, it will be something they've always done, but just in a new way. And I think for other people, it will be like brand new things that they're like doing, or maybe some combination of both. And for me, like using my voice is like something that I'm being led to really learn how to do in a new way. I think, yes, simply by listening to my voice, I think people get activations. But I'm also, and also like, you know, with my writing work, I've always kind of been like using my throat for my writing, but I suspect I'm going to be doing other types of like vocal transmissions at some point in the future. So it's funny you bring that up, because it's actually become like a really huge part of what my path is leading me towards. And I think that the more everybody can lean into the power of their voice, the better, because in like the throat chakra, the original name of it is Vishuddha. It means purification. So there's like an immunological function, I feel, in the healthy exercising of your voice, because it's vibration, it's sound, it's literally reality creation on some level. So that's why I try to take care of the kind of things I say, because sometimes like I'll make a joke and then it'll happen and I'll be like, I didn't mean it though. But the universe like takes it seriously. So I have to like, you know, be careful sometimes. But I think that, you know, the more we can open our throats and really lean into authentic self-expression in whatever way that calls to you, you know, the more we're going to be able to start to build in the face of the kind of collapsing paradigms. Because yes, there's a lot of destruction happening. This is serving us ultimately, even though it's like, obviously, you know, very painful for some people out there right now. And I totally sympathize 100%, because it's definitely a very difficult thing to deal with, especially like it materially impacts people like in deep ways. But it's also really, I think, redirecting us into a different path that is going to be ultimately more harmonious for us when we can start to lean into the opportunities that lie within that. So, yeah.
Do you feel like your voice changed since the last 3 years?
You know, I'm not sure. I kind of feel like it's the same, at least in terms of like the way it sounds. But I do think that it's been greatly refined in terms of the quality of the vibration that I'm sending out. Again, like this, I would say, this started, I would say, even before the throat injury, like when I started doing a lot of the alchemical work I needed to do to clear my channel, which was sort of kicked off by ayahuasca. Like I had kind of been intellectualizing my healing process before ayahuasca. Like I knew a lot of the stuff I was like needing to do, but like I wasn't actually somatically doing it. And again, it was sort of just like a result of my own like not really having a lot of mentors at the time. Like I just kind of was like floating around like reading books and like, you know, developing my mediumship. But I really it wasn't until like I did ayahuasca in 2017 for the first time, and she was like, she basically showed me, she's like, this is how you heal. And I was like, oh, it was like, I was like, wow, like I've been doing this wrong the whole time. But it was, she was basically like, you need to become a clear channel. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll do whatever you want. And so it was after that, that I like really started to clear my channel. And so I would say it started then, even though I'd had my awakening a few years before that, I had kind of like a little bit of a maybe like introductory period where I was just kind of like getting the lay of the land. And then they were like, okay, now it's time for you to like suffer a lot to heal yourself. And I'm like, okay.
Well, the more I see like the difference between men and women, like we're definitely here to experience things, to actually do the crying, do the meditating, do those experiences. But we're in a world where spirituality is Eckhart Tolle and Ramdas and all those men who speak. And that's how men heal. Men heal through learning a different way, new perspectives, thinking and rationalizing and then having a direction in where to go. And for us, it's taking that energy in the body and then doing something about it. So yeah, that's how it goes. And it's not easy, but it's so powerful.
Yeah, you know, actually, like, I had this revelation, too. Like, I do Kriya Yoga, which I would say, I guess it's, like, applicable to everybody. Like, anybody can do it. But I found myself when I was looking for a place that was giving me the technique without me going through like a whole rigmarole of like dedicating myself to a guru and stuff like that. Which hilariously then ended up happening, and then that ended badly. So I was like, oh, it's all fulfilling prophecy. But before that, like, I read Autobiography of a Yogi, and I was like, oh, like, Kriya Yoga, like, this is the lightning path to enlightenment. For those who don't know, Autobiography of Yogi is, like, the autobiography of Yogananda, who was, like, one of the first yogis to come over here from India to kind of lay the groundwork for the coming ascension process. So it's actually, I think, I would say historically significant to kind of look into if you're interested in, like, the kind of history of, like, the human ascension process. But, I was like, oh, I want to learn Kriya Yoga because it's the fastest lightning path and I want that. I was at that point, I was like, I need to get out of here. So I looked around LA and there are places that like SRF, which was Yogananda's organization, is located here. And there are some other places here that offer it, but they're like offshoots of that. But I kept not seeing the goddess represented. And it was such a red flag for me. I was like, I mean, you know, if Kriya Yoga is supposed to be like the Shushumna Nadi, you know, in going up straight in the middle, shouldn't it be like a kind of equal representation of like men and women, you know, here, just from a philosophical standpoint? And no one could really give me an answer. And so I kind of gave up for a little while finding it. And I did eventually get it. Again, encountered a person who got detoxed a little bit. That's a whole other story of my dark occult experience, but I do still use the technique. It just came to me at a kind of a great cost. I don't recommend this path for other people. I would say, you know, if you're drawn to learn it, try and learn it from like not a dark occult practitioner, but which again, didn't know that at the time, but it happens. Anyway, I would just say like, I still felt unsatisfied, even though I had this technique that was materially helping transmute my karmas at a very rapid rate. And it's no joke. They really don't give you a warning label on what happens when you start doing this. I learned later that they advise you to do radical donating to kind of offset what happens. And I just didn't know that. And then I started getting like really attacked by kind of this karmic clearing process. But yeah, I was still like really not feeling satisfied in terms of like my feminine energy. Like I was feeling like my spiritual practices were lacking in that. And I had found Claire Nocte's work pretty early on when I first started researching Vedic astrology, because as soon as I had my reading with my first Vedic astrologer, I was like, I need to learn everything about Vedic astrology now. I was like, I was like, I need to like watch every YouTube video that exists. So I did that. I went on YouTube. I was like watching every video, and that's how I found Claire Nocte. And I want to take this moment to plug her work because I have found her work to be such a game changer for me. I really can't recommend her highly enough. Even if you just like watch her videos, you get like such a deep understanding of like how the nakshatras work and how all of this information and insight relates to the female path. And when I realized that there was like a whole different female path than the male path, again, kind of being a gender essentialist at this, you know, moment for the sake of clarity, but, you know, I was like, oh, this is making so much more sense. Like why I was always kind of intuitively drawn to Tantra, I was like, didn't really know where to begin because I realized that there's a lot of like kind of superfluous Western influence in now packaged in with the name Tantra. But through Tantra, I would say, is kind of where I now have gravitated. And I definitely feel like practices that I've gotten through her course that she offers, which is like a kind of like weekly course you can sign up for called Female Path, if you're a female path oriented person, I definitely would recommend looking into it, just because it really sets you up for success, in my opinion. Like, I had been doing stuff before this, but I think that it was like the final piece that really helped make my practice, spiritual practice, a lot more holistic, and has really helped me get more in tune with my goddess proclivities, just because, like, I mean, I grew up like with all sisters. I went to all girls school for 13 years. You know, I pretty much only have, I've had very few male friends. I mostly have girlfriends. Like, I've always been kind of just like a woman's person. Like, I just have always been around women. And so it was very natural for me to kind of gravitate more towards the female spiritual practices. I just didn't, there's not a ton of resources on it because so many of the goddess paths have been eradicated through patriarchy, and then the ones that remain have been infiltrated by men. Now, some of these guys are legitimate practitioners and devotees of the goddess, but I've also had this tendency to meet people who claim they're for women, and then it turns out they just like to take advantage of them. So, you know, it's like, it's a bit tricky out there sometimes, but I would say that, like, having practices that get you in the body, understanding embodiment, you know, doing the somatic work, but also understanding that, like, I think for women, like, at least for me personally, my huge struggle in life was mental and emotional. And I went through such an intense process to be able to balance my emotional state. And I think that's kind of where the, like, yes, we're meant to be kind of experiencing more of that as women, just inherently in our being, because we're just like more watery, but I tended to definitely be more on the imbalanced side, and having all these different practices has really helped me to, like, kind of reach a certain level of equilibrium. And it doesn't mean that we don't experience, like, human emotion, but the key is to just not have it, like, run your life, you know? And ultimately, you know, eventually there does come a point where we kind of transcend that. But I would say, you know, it's a process, and it's a nonlinear process, and it can't be bypassed either. So I think right now what people really need is to really feel the things they've suppressed. And then once they've done that, it's about moving beyond those things and not identifying with them and stuff. But I think some people also have a tendency to want to, like, just skip over stuff. So it's like, it's again, this delicate balance of, like, understanding what's appropriate for you and when, and not demonizing where people are in the process, you know? But also understanding that, like, truly, if we want world peace, it has to start within ourselves, with inner peace.
Exactly. And the class, or even the videos of Claire Nakti, are really helping us to, like, have a pattern or have a template of how it works and how it works when it's balanced. Because what we know is the imbalanced feminine and the toxic feminine and the dark feminine, or the one who's a victim. So we need to see, like, what's the gift frequency, as we say that in Jinkies, like, what is the frequency where the woman is empowered and she's serious, like, she's not just like this little thing on the side and glorious and beautiful and just rooted into this earth. So I love that class. I love the work that a lot of people do, and maybe connecting with saints or connecting with different archetypes that we also find in Jyotish. But we're basically in a desert where we all see, like, the Avengers and all the men with good values, and we don't see the women with that. And we're like, what is there? Like, who am I? How can I assign myself to something if there is no template for anyone? So I love this work, and I love the fact that we're able to try that for ourselves and maybe define that for ourselves as well. Like, who are we? What do we want to be? Yeah.
It's so true. Like, I feel like, these ancient traditions are so important to remember and integrate that wisdom. But at the same time, we are moving into kind of an unprecedented new era. So it's also about kind of uncovering, what's the alchemy of that? Like, where do we, like, once we integrate that into our contemporary experience, what's kind of created as the result? And I don't know exactly what it looks like. I would say it probably is rooted out in, I mean, I would say it's rooted in spiritual sovereignty. I think that that does include there being community. But I think that in order for a healthy community to thrive, whether that's like a spiritual community, religious community, in general, just a regular community, we have to have that sovereignty within ourselves. It really is like the Leo Aquarius axis. Like, everyone talks about the age of Aquarius and stuff, which is like the energy we're going into right now. We're kind of in this like intense transition point. In fact, I have this theory that the lunar mansion that represents where we're at right now is Purva Bhadrapada, because it's like the nakshatra that bridges Pisces and Aquarius. And I haven't really like delved into this in depth a lot, but it's a very intense, fiery purification place in the sky. And I feel like that's kind of where we're at right now. But also, like, every sign is a part of an axis. And so the other side of Aquarius is Leo, which is, of course, like, ruled by the sun, your individuality. And so it's important to also have that be fully integrated so that we can have these really strong, interconnected communities where we work in these like larger group settings to create like the new civilization and stuff. And truly, the path to empowerment is shadow work. It's like the raw material. It is the raw material. Once you witness it and, transmute that and integrate that, you create the space to hold more light, and then you reveal a darker shadow, and then it's like a kind of rinse and repeat. But the more you do shadow work, the more empowered you are to create your own reality or co-create your own reality. Because you're not, you hold more spiritual power, and then also you are more clear on what it is that you want to create, because you're not being driven by unconscious or subconscious things from your shadow, basically. And I would say that's been the major lesson of Trump. I mean, I've always seen him as like a clear channel for the collective shadow, kind of what happens when you don't integrate that, and then it kind of runs the show, basically, literally, like a reality TV show host. And as a result, we've had to really look in the mirror with ourselves and how we've given our power away to all of these systems. And we can blame him all we want, but we're the ones who sit by and watch him do things that we don't like every day. The people who don't support him or whatever, then there are people who do support him or whatever. But and again, this is not to try and have like a political conversation, but I do think that at some point the spiritual is the political. I think that people who try to bypass that I question that. It's like, yes, there's a lot of illusions, kind of a show out there, but it's also having direct impact on people's lives. So we can't just like ignore it completely. We just have to be able to interface with these things like from a place of energetic neutrality, so that we're not feeding into, the energy harvesting operations behind it all, which is a whole other topic. But, you know, I would say that the biggest lesson of Trump is that you can create your own reality, but you have to understand the power of the shadow. And I think Trump represents somebody who, like, is kind of the channel of the shadow here. And he just has created this reality because he negated any other person's perception of it. Even to the bitter end, he's saying, you know, I don't have COVID. It's like, but you do. Like, you know, it's like, but, you know, that's obviously an extreme example, but, like, you know, from the very beginning, he was negating other people's perceptions of the reality because he's a reality TV show host. He understands how reality is created when you affirm what you want your reality to be. So he's the example of when you brute force it, which again will come back to bite you if you don't, like, integrate your shadow. But if you integrate your shadow, you don't have to brute force it. It just sort of, you organically work as, like, a divine instrument because you've cleared your channel. And so you're able to kind of just, like, allow this co-creative process to happen more organically. So yeah, there, like, this whole thing didn't happen as an accident. Like, it's totally part of our evolutionary process. Now, I personally don't think that that's something we want to, like, repeat. But again, it's like, if we haven't learned our lesson, then it will repeat in some fashion. Maybe not in the exact same way, but the same flavor, I guess you could say. And I think that if more people looked at the situation on both sides as a teaching, you know, both sides meaning, like, obviously, like, pro or anti, whatever. Obviously, there's the side of, like, I understand what's happening, you know, from kind of a neutral standpoint. But, like, I would say to people who support Trump, consider maybe, like,
not supporting Trump.
Not supporting Trump. I mean, I would really just say, like, I just see unintegrated white supremacy. I mean, and I'm not saying that. And there's also other stuff involved in that, also unintegrated patriarchy. I think a lot of people just want someone to, like, solve all their problems instead of take responsibility for themselves. But I would say that's also on the other side too. It's just that they want somebody else to do it, you know? And then for the anti-Trump people, it's like, okay, yes, but have you considered the ways in which you're a vibrational match for Trump? You know, like, in what way are you giving your power away? In what way are you being an egotistical, judgmental person? You know, it's like, we all have something to learn from this. And in order to not repeat history, you have to, like, understand what's happened here. I think a lot of people have really loved to pretend like this has happened by osmosis, you know, but this is the most American president we've ever had. He's just being honest about it. You know what I mean? Like, ironically speaking, like, he's actually probably in some ways the most honest president we've had, because he's not pretending to be somebody that he's not, like other people have. Except maybe Jimmy Carter. We can exclude Jimmy Carter from this conversation, but I would say, like, maybe everybody else has been, like, you know, doing the same things Trump has done in many ways, just, like, under a pretense of being, like, polite about it. You know, it's like, well, is that polite? Is that respectable? You know? No. So, yeah, you know, it'll be interesting to see what unfolds. I think, you know, I was telling somebody yesterday, like, we're in this kind of weird pocket of time right now where, like, we're in this waning moon period when this is being recorded. And, you know, we have this election coming up, but again, because I saw the whole White House go into a crack, like, I'm not convinced that there's going to be really any more precedents like after this. Like, I don't know how it will go down. I don't know what, like, the series of events will kind of be. I just kind of think that, you know, the systems we have right now have proven to not be strong enough to withstand the onset of fascism. And so if there was some sort of constitutional crisis around who's the real president, I don't think that anybody would be able to like come to a collective agreement as to what that is. You know, whether it's because the election results are being disputed, or there's been tampering in the election, or there's something happens to the people who are currently in power in some way due to the COVID situation. Again, there's so much at play right now. It's like a very weird time to kind of be recording this podcast, but I would just say, like, for those who are hinging on the election results to kind of start to change things, I would say let that go right now. Let it go. Because I think what's really going to be asked of us is, what are you going to do in your power individually to contribute to the collective co-creation of the solution to the current situation? And that just means finding your role. Because in the body of humans, there are cells. Every cell is a job. And it's the same thing with the body of humanity. Every human person, as like an individual cell in the body of humanity, has their job, has their role. And the key is to just find that out. And then when you do that, execute that to the best of your ability. Even if that's like, it doesn't have to be like a specific job, like that we now know at like connected to like the capitalistic idea of what a job is. Like, really, it's about honing your own frequency and emitting that kind of as like your baseline thing. Then it's like, okay, what are you then inspired to do from that state? That's like your job.
Each cell works with the other. So it's a whole organism. And we all, like right now with what we talked about, we're all going back to the first answer that you gave, where you have dreams, you work through dreams, and you read the energy. You never know how it's going to play out. So it's the same with the presidency, right? We have no clue. We have ideas, we have archetypes, just like the work of Carl Jung, and just it changes. I come from the background of having lived in Turkey for 5 years, where I really saw democracy didn't exist. It's basically a dictatorship, but it's still called a presidency. So we don't know how that image that you had might happen. Is it city states, or is it Trump just becoming a dictator? We don't know. Like, we have no clue how it's, I truly hope it's not going to happen, but like, it goes back to, in the end, we actually only have the control of what we're about to do. What you just said, like, what are you going to do in the face of all this? And we're all responsible. No one's going to save us, whether it's Biden or Kamala Harris or anyone else on, you know, the European side, whatever happens. No one's saving us. So we actually have to create those communities, those strategies, and do things together and plan that. So get to work. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, it's interesting. Also, you remind me, last year, one of the most common visions and dreams themes I was having, aside from the laundromats, was France and Paris. And it started when I had a vision of like a tower in Paris, like exploding or having something happen to it. And it cropped up a couple times. And then it was when the Notre Dame thing went down, where I saw the spire on top of it, like, collapse. I was like, oh my gosh, like, that's what I saw. And to me, that symbolized, like, the spire representing, like, the more phallic nature of the church, and then the rest of the church being, like, the feminine energy kind of represented like the fall of patriarchy kind of symbolically. And, but then France in general, like, I think a lot of what we're hooked into energetically as well on some level is like the French Revolution energies and the notion that, you know, we the people can take our power back from perhaps more 1% type situations. Now, obviously, you know, maybe some people out there are like, yeah, bring out the guillotines. I'm like, you know, maybe there's a way where we don't have to do that. Like, I'm definitely not advocating for violence. I think that, you know, I'm definitely more of the, like, let's create positive solutions type person. Although obviously, like, there's a whole dark feminine destruction element that's very prominent right now, like the Kali energy, like the kind of divine destruction energy. And some people maybe will be called to do that and have that force work through them in some fashion. And that's a valid thing. Again, it's going to be so different depending on, you know, the person. And it's important, I think, that the more you become a clear channel, the more it just sort of happens organically, and you don't, it's not from your ego. It's not like I'm going to change the world. It's more like I'm here to like show up and like do what I'm in meant to be doing kind of thing. So there's a definite consciousness level that I would say is required for that. But again, it just comes down to when you do the shadow work, you become more empowered, you become a clearer channel, you act from divine inspiration, you automatically become a part of the reharmonization process of the collective body. And that also gets, you also vibrate like your soul family in and your team. And then you work in groups and then it becomes even more powerful. So I would say one of the bigger themes I've also tapped into recently is like a divine feminine warrior sisterhood, where people are like in that like peaceful warrior, divine feminine warrior energy in groups together to kind of be on the front lines of this like spiritual war kind of. So there's definitely an element of that, but it's a top-down process. You know, it starts from the higher realms and percolates down. It's a trickle-down effect. So less so about like, I would say forcing things to change from what your ego thinks things should be, which can sometimes be a hard thing to kind of break out of when you see injustice happen. Like, I'm not going to sit back here and say that this is like an easy thing to like wrap your mind around, you know? Because there are, I don't want to like trivialize like the level of human suffering that's happening right now on this planet as a result of all of these things. There really are dark forces operating, but we have to kind of neutralize that in our own self before we can really be in a position to kind of take on any externalization of that.
Whether we see it or not, it's here. That's like the shadow work. Like, whether we see those evil forces, those attachments, those entanglements, all those things, they're here. So we start by recognizing them and seeing them, and then we understand how the world works, how those algorithm works, all those frequencies, and then it gets better or not. I wanted to tell you something about the churches. In France, there's not just that church who was on fire this year, a lot of them.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, what is happening? And a lot of people are saying that people who have been victims of priests raping them when they were kids have been setting those churches on fire because the church doesn't recognize it and doesn't fire those priests and remove them from the community and from being in touch with kids. So those adults have now been taking things into their own hands and setting fire to the churches. So in a way, it's shadow work and warship. So I thought it was interesting.
You know, that, and talk about such an ancient problem. I mean, some of this stuff goes so far back, it's hard to fathom. It seems to me like this pedophilia problem, especially in the Catholic Church, but I would say even, you know, outside of that, just in general, really is such a deep core wound that stems from such an ancient time. And I think that the way it's kind of become so, or the way that we've kind of, it's been revealed to be so commonplace in the Catholic Church is just goes to show how deeply linked it is to like the patriarchy and this kind of, it's such a, there's a lot to unpack with it, but the suppression of healthy sexuality and the suppression of, I would even say like
beingness. They're not
using children for energy harvesting purposes, basically. Gigi Young has actually done some really great work that I recommend on like the dark occult practices that are, that require that. And it was really interesting for me to learn from her perspective, what she's kind of downloaded around this is that because people who are in like the dark occult require and to require vampirization of other people's energies to do their stuff because they don't have access to their own inner child, because if they did, they probably would not be in the dark cult. You know what I mean? It's like, it's been so shut down. And so they need the energy of children basically in order to do the kind of work that they want to do and whatever it is that they are wanting to get for themselves. That's just a very simplified version of what she delves into in her YouTube work. But I think for anybody who's interested in this topic, either just because they are interested in doing shadow work around it or just learning more about it or have been a victim of this kind of abuse on some level, like may find it interesting because it was definitely an eye-opener for me in terms of understanding what leads people to do that, either on a conscious level or even a subconscious level. Because even the people who are doing it without any knowledge of dark occult, it usually happened to them. And then it usually happened to the person that abused them. So it's like this long running chain. And so I think understanding the root cause of that is really important to break the chain. You know, because I will say, like, when I was clearing the grid, like I mentioned, back in March and April, a lot of the stuff that came up, this significant portion was connected to the ritual abuse of children in dark cult. So that is something I think to just be aware of as like a layer that's being uncovered more and more. Because everything's going to have to be revealed to be transmuted in order to like have full radical transparency of like initiating us into 5D. There can be no secrets. So the more light we anchor in collectively, the darker the shadows that we're going to be revealing. So it's kind of going to be really, that's like, it's kind of going to be like, are things getting better or worse? It's like, well, better, but they're going to look kind of bad. You know, it's like, it's going to be kind of like a double-edged sword here in terms of like how we're going to be seeing things play out. But I think that's been what's sort of bummed me out about the whole like QAnon cult, because again, like with many different cult type activity, there's usually a seed of truth in that. But then when the cult mentality takes over, it like sort of can get people who are not in it to think that it's all bullshit, when actually they're like, even with Scientology, like, you know, the guy, L. Ron Hubbard, who created it, like, he was friends with like Jack Parsons and these guys who were involved with like these occult groups here in LA, like OTO and different things. And those were all based on like Golden Dawn, like Western mystery tradition type philosophical systems, esoteric systems, and magical systems. And so he just kind of like cherry picked things from that and made it a part of Scientology. And so when people start to get into Scientology, like, certain things really resonate with them because it actually is rooted in like true esoteric stuff, but then they get kind of sucked into this whole other thing. So, and then people dismiss the whole thing as if it's fake. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, yes, but like, I think it's important that we understand that there's a whole breadth of nuance required to be able to navigate these waters, and that it's key to not like throw the baby out the bathwater kind of thing, because there is some truth to this stuff, and it's definitely really alarming and concerning to consider, for sure. And it takes a lot of discernment to be able to navigate it successfully, which is why I think I always advise people who are looking to delve into conspiracy stuff of any type, to really do the shadow work first, because otherwise you are, it's like kind of like when people are like hacking into computers, they try and find a backdoor. Unintegrated shadows are like the backdoor that things can hook into. And it's happened to me. I've seen it happen to other people in really bad ways. Like, and so that's why my focus has been on shadow work more so than I would say other things in the recent years, because I knew this was definitely a thing. And I would say the more we get into like the galactic stuff, the more important it's going to be that we have done that work, because the higher you want to go, the deeper your roots must reach. And I think that really leaning into the fact that we have to decolonize and re-indigenize this planet is the absolute number one most important thing to consider before you start to develop like relationships with other extra dimensional beings. Because a lot of them have like karmic links with Earth, and a lot of those karmic links are rooted in patternings that are very similar to colonization. So
you need to have boundaries. That's it. You need to
yes,
heal and
yes,
not be traumatized
yeah.
and have boundaries, because otherwise you're just exposing yourself
yeah.
again.
And I sort of hate being the cautionary tale person, because I really think that there's other better narratives, like utopian narratives we can be telling ourselves, that I think are very important. But it's also important to just like really carry an awareness around like
the truth. That's just the truth.
I see a lot of disinformation, misinformation, psyops, intentional confusion, and then just having seen false mm-hmm. light like up close and personal in a really intense way, like really I suffered like some pretty bad consequences like from my brush with some of this stuff. And I'm fine now, whatever, but I'm pretty sure anyway. But like, it's, and of course, like, it's a learning process. So like, you can't necessarily avoid it all the time. But, you know, dark occult doesn't go around saying like, oh, we're dark occult. You know, they go around saying that they're a little of the light, of course, you know. So they're not going to like be necessarily advertising them. I mean, maybe they will sometimes. But like mm-hmm. some people are very overt about it, I guess you could say, because part of it is happening. Like what Gigi Young talks about is how a lot of things happen in plain sight, because that's how they get you to consent, kind of inadvertently because you see it and you're like, oh, okay. And then you've consented, you know, it's like, oh no, wait. But then there are people who are like operating as if they're, you know, these gurus and things, but really they're like not. So, I would just say, like, I guess the common refrain of this podcast is like me telling people, like, lean into your shadow work first and foremost, because it's like the foundation upon which you're going to be really building anything. And it's a source of your power. And it is a responsibility, you know, and that's like actually one of the biggest things that I took away from ayahuasca was the last time I did it, before I went to Peru, the last time I did it here in the States, was the word responsibility. And I think for some people, the lesson is that with great responsibility comes great power. Like for me, it was like, I was so heavy with the responsibility part. I was still kind of like not fully in my power because I was so weighed down by it all. Then there's the converse part of it, which is like, you know, you have a lot of power, but like, no, that comes with responsibility, and that it's important that you prioritize that first and foremost when it comes to your spiritual power, especially because it's not, it is your power, but it's like not your power. It's like you are the power, and you are allowing yourself to be divinely guided to use that in a way that is in the service of the highest good, as opposed to like service to your own ego, your lower self or whatever. So, I mean, that's basically what dark occult magic does or whatever.
Thank you. And, you know, seeing those shadows without shame and guilt helps you to have those informations about what's happening. And then it helps you to see the shadows of others and then not be lost into thinking anyone's a savior or anything. You just take on responsibilities. You're aware of their shadows. You don't see it with judgment and shame, and you just advance and do whatever you need to do. We all have shadows, so let's go. But thank you.
Yes, the no shame thing is so important. I mean, I would say discernment is definitely important, but and that's, and shadow work is how you cultivate that for sure. But definitely like really releasing judgment and shame, whether it's on your own self or other people, is such a hugely important part of the process, because ultimately this is all, the arc of this all is getting us into like the unity consciousness of it all. And when we're in that, we recognize, we realize on a deep spiritual level that we are all one. So, you know, anything that you like, you know, are to judge in another, you're really just making a judgment about yourself. In fact, usually when I have those thoughts, I'm like, let's look, okay, let's reel it in, you know, to me and really examine that. And I'm also reminded of like, I think Ram Dass was the one, speaking of Ram Dass, obviously before he had passed away, he had had an altar set up, and on the altar was like a picture of Barack Obama and a picture of Trump. And it's just like, that was, and it was supposed to be like a teaching of like
polarity.
Exactly. It's like, this is the same. Like we're all the same. Obviously, you know, there's many different levels to it, but I thought it was an interesting kind of thought experiment to get people to really think and get reactions from that. But yeah, I mean, I think that really the name of the game at this time, especially coming up as we get deeper into the rest of 2020 and into 2021, is, you know, what's your role? How do you best embody that? And what is it that you're creating right now? Because I really do believe that this time, this incubation period really is, we're going to be birthing like major artistic works, major new inventions, like all these different things are going to be like coming out of this. It's just that we can't really see it right now because we're like still kind of in the void a little bit. People are like acclimating still, I think. But ultimately, it's one of those things where we'll look back and we'll be like, oh my gosh, like, I totally get why that all had to happen. Even though it can be really hard to deal with the consequences of that in the immediate moment, especially if you've been materially affected by like COVID, if you've had like people pass away from COVID and stuff, it's like obviously extremely hard and emotionally intense and things like that. But I always look back on things that were like the most hard in my life, like my initiatory experiences and things, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like at the time I absolutely like hated my life and, you know, was wishing for death literally frequently. And now I look back and I'm like, I totally get why that had to happen. So it really does, like these things really do expand your consciousness in the long term, even if it is difficult in the moment, challenging in the moment, which is why the spiritual practices are so important. I mean, meditation and stuff, it really does help ground and center you and keep you connected to the truth of what, of who you are and what really matters.
Yeah, and this is why we're here, offering everything we can to help others as well. So thank you so much. Thank you so, so much. I usually talk more, but I was just listening. You gave me so much frequencies. I'm clairsentient, and I was like feeling like all of the nose, and I was like, whoa, like behind, I'm feeling all of my bones. So,
oh my gosh.
You have power. Would you like to tell us where we can connect with you and where we can buy a reading or consult?
Sure. Yeah. So, I'm on Twitter at Erin Shade, and I'm on Instagram at Erin Shade Oracle, and my website is erinshade.com. I should probably update it. I haven't really been updating it recently. But I don't have like a online booking schedule. I mostly just take bookings over email, which is erinshadeoracle@gmail.com. And I generally just say, like, if you're in resonance with me, feel free to reach out. I'm not here to like I don't do it as my main job. So I don't like rely on it. I mean, maybe in the future I will, but so I'm just interested in working with people who are really in it for the growth and the work, because people who do contact my energy generally experience like a really rapid detox and acceleration in their path. And so, not to like come with a warning label, but it's just like a part of what I work with, just because I've just done so much of the shadow clearing and stuff. And so definitely like I focus on empowerment aspects of it, but after the fact, you may experience like just a lot of really rapid shifts in your life. Maybe I should have warned you before this podcast.
Don't worry.
But whoops. But thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for being here.